While millions of us shelter at home, we are thinking of those without a safe home to count on. With the spread of the COVID-19 pandemic, families are facing both a public health and an economic crisis. The longer it goes on, the more this pandemic also becomes a housing emergency. You can't shelter in place, self-quarantine, or regularly wash your hands if you don't have a safe and stable place to call home. Stay with me to learn about what one organization is doing locally and nationally to address some of these incredible challenges. Hey, everybody, I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and this is Impact Earth Advocacy. So now I can just say I happily, warmly welcome back someone who cares deeply about helping people, about poverty, about being a stand for much needed change, both here in the United States and around the world. She has a global reach. So please join me in welcoming a true disruptor for good, my friend T. Van Hook, who is the CEO of Habitat for Humanity Tucson. And T, it is so great to have you back here. And who knew it would be under these incredibly challenging circumstances? I love it when you come to the studio and kick your high heels off and, you know, we get down with our old bad selves. And I miss that. So I am glad to have you here, at least with your voice.
Well, I'm excited to be on the show. And it really, this pandemic is bringing to light some things that you have been talking about for years, we've been talking about for years, and that is that we have inequities on this earth. You know, Jane Goodall, who, you know, you love, and Jonathan Reckford, the CEO of Habitat for Humanity International, met about a year ago. And one of the amazing thoughts, and I won't get the quote exactly right, Ms. Goodall shared was that if we don't have safe, affordable places, if people don't have a safe roof over their head, if they don't have some place to go, they'll destroy the earth trying to create that for their families. And so having energy efficient, decent, adequate housing for everyone on earth is really critical if we're going to have an ecosystem, an environment that's going to be sustainable in the long term.
And you know, my heart beats rapidly when you bring up Dr. Jane. And I, you know, it was one of the highlights of my whole entire life, getting to spend time one-on-one with her. And all I can say is she's all that. There is one Jane Goodall, and I was thrilled to see there's a new documentary coming out about her, and I can't wait. It's coming out in the next day or so. So let's, I think a great place to start when I get some time with you is for you to remind us who have heard about what Habitat Tucson does and to inform new listeners who may not have heard around the country about the important mission of Habitat for Humanity and what you do to execute that mission. So tell us.
Well, here in Tucson, you know, our primary focus and our focus for years, for 40 years, has been on building new energy efficient housing for working families. It's not a giveaway program. The families pay for the house. So we offer them a mortgage at an affordable interest rate, extremely affordable interest rate. And they work alongside of us building their home, building community, and that's what brings hope to our community. You know, the pandemic's really pointing out something for me that I've known, but it's really bringing to light. You said it earlier, if you don't have a safe place, imagine living in crowded accommodations, 8 people in a studio or 1-bedroom apartment, which is the case all over our community and throughout this country, and not to mention around the world and some of the things people are facing for housing. But, you know, some of us have been inside with our loved ones for a number of weeks, or someone's leaving the house because they have to work. They have an essential job. The family needs it economically. How do you remain safe as a family in overcrowded conditions? And millions of families are facing this in our country. And it's an epic, it's a crisis in and of itself. Not to mention, you know, we won't even go to the homeless and others. But when you're paying more than 50% of your wages for your basic housing needs, that's rent or a mortgage, and suddenly there's a loss of income in that family, how do you keep a shelter over your head and pay for food and the medications? And what we're hearing from a lot of lower income families is that the food programs at school provide, you know, meals for their children, breakfast and lunch, or sometimes just lunch. But now that the children are home, family's home, the grocery bill is going up. The utility bills are rising. And so it really starts compounding itself.
And heaven forbid they should get sick.
Oh, yes. Someone in the household is sick. And let's talk about that for a minute, because we know cancer, postpartum depression, and not just one cancer, multiple cancers, postpartum depression. So, you know, that health and well-being of newborns and their mothers, mental health issues, all types of things across, you know, every aspect of life, your recovery rate is higher. Now, we don't know about the COVID or the coronavirus because the statistics are new, but your recovery from cancer, from kidney failure, from liver issues, from postpartum depression, bipolar disorder, your ability to deal with these illnesses and recover are multiplied exponentially when you have safe, secure housing. And we've known this for a generation. So I just think it's really important that we stress that. And with, you know, 70% of Americans paying, you know, more than 30%, and about half of Americans paying half of their salary for, you know, just to live, there's an issue.
It's such a big issue. And part of what I always want to do this on the air and do the national shout out to your team that helps me do a better show and provides me with pertinent, relevant information. And it's taken on new meaning for me now, because this is something, you're right, you and I have been aware of it. We live it. We live to show up to make a difference. But I just want people to press pause here for a minute and think, the biggest nut each month in almost everybody's budget is their rent or their mortgage, right? So
absolutely,
you lose your job, and a lot of people, it was like, I showed up to work today and I have no job. So it wasn't like they got 2 weeks notice or got, you know, severance for 6 weeks or whatever. So that's the reality. I'd love you to talk a little bit about what Habitat organizations are doing, because there's such a ripple effect to this. What do the landlords do who might have a mortgage that they have to pay? And if they are thinking about evicting someone, which in my head, maybe my brain is not big enough, I think, what would be served by evicting anyone? Because where the heck would they go? But there's foreclosures and evictions. So what is the groundswell of change that you're advocating for with Habitat Tucson and other organizations around the country? What are you doing?
Well, we need to support the organizations that are helping folks stay in their housing and help people with their housing. I was very excited the United Way here in Tucson offered us $20,000 to help pay a mortgage payment for families that live in Habitat houses.
Wow.
We've had another donor, the Tucson Foundations, have come through with $50,000. We're not advocating for a lot of handouts, right? The stimulus package is going to cost us as a country. It's great that we have these things available right now, but we need to remember that there are priorities now: shelter, you know, staying safe at home, medical care for those who do contract an illness, and some of those, you know, longer terms. And, you know, how do we get to pandemic and the animal-human transfer and what we're doing to the earth and things that I know you'll have experts on. But when we talk about the housing element and shelter, it becomes so much real for people now. At Habitat, we're building new homes. We're repairing houses for people who live in housing that need a critical home repair. It's great that you have a shelter over your head, but do you have mold in it? Do you have appropriate heating and air conditioning? You know, are those conditions that are good for you to be living in? And so we're trying to address these, and we're addressing them one family at a time. Right now, there's a lot of complaint. You know, we have a huge, huge volunteer base, and we're not mobilized right now. And I've been hearing some information about, you know, some fussing about why don't we have all of our volunteers out building more than ever now? Because we are being part of a community solution by sheltering, by telling people to stay home. It's not a critical activity. We don't want to put our volunteers, the folks we work with, in jeopardy right now. The best thing all of us can do is stay home. And those of us that have that home and appreciate it, you see how you can help a local housing organization to make sure more Americans, more people across our globe, have a home to shelter in, have safe, clean running water, and sanitation, and all of those things that I believe are a right to every human being.
And thank you. I just want to press pause here also and say thank you, because that is the right thing to do right now, because you could get a bunch of volunteers together. Some of them could die, and I might bump up against them in Safeway. You know, we have to have a little bit of a longer term vision for what we do now is going to so greatly impact what happens tomorrow. So are there any national efforts or national, you know, a conglomeration of nonprofits that are working with Congress? Because in the conversations that I'm listening to, they're talking about payroll relief and ways to keep businesses open, which is great because if they're open, people can maybe pay their rent. But what you've been attacking from forever is a much longer term systemic problem. How to get housing affordable. It's part of the great divide conversation. You know, James and I talk about, he always talks about a loaf of bread. And this definitely ages me, and I'm proud of it. When I was a kid, I kid you not, bread was about 30 cents a loaf. So now I double dog dare anyone to find a decent loaf of bread that's less than $3, and even that's generous. And what he always says is wages have not risen commensurate with the cost of living, nor the cost of housing. So tell me what you're doing to help address what has been a long-term systemic issue, but this is pulling back the curtain and saying, hey, folks, this was a house of cards. Let's use this as an opportunity to change. I feel like
so
I should.
Doing a variety
I was just on
of things.
A soapbox. I'm sorry for that. It was a little bit of a rant.
Okay. Well, I rant too. You know, we're doing a slew of things, and it didn't start with the COVID.
No.
Epidemic. You know, we're looking at equitable housing across the board, and what that means. We're looking at ways that people can help. And I break it down this way. The government has some tools at hand. They have taxation. They have a variety of tools that they can put into play. And we as the public have some tools that we can put into play. At Habitat, we're very good at leveraging an amazing volunteer corps, people who are able to and have the means to donate and see that is critical, and corporate sponsorships to build houses and community, and as we say, hope. And right now, part of community building is staying home, and part of community building is finding other ways to reach out and touch someone, to have a conversation, to let them know that their point of view is not being ignored. The fact that folks get a stimulus check does not answer all of their problems. When we've had a systemic issue around food, housing, healthcare, you know, other quality of life issues, they're exasperated by this type of situation, by the pandemic right now that we're seeing, and we're paying attention to it. But, you know, in a few weeks when people go back to normal,
The new normal.
It's not normal. The new, whatever the new normal is, right. It's still not going right. to include a system
right.
where everyone has access to affordable housing. It's not going to include a system where everyone has a place to shelter, where everyone has things. When, you know, we're worried about our toilet paper, right? Are we going to have our toilet paper? And are we going to have food? When you're a low-income family and you only have a little bit of resource, and you go to the grocery store, and you don't have the money to go to a big box and buy 400 rolls of toilet paper, right?
Right.
You have the money to get what your family needs, maybe for just a brief period, until your next pay or your next unemployment check or whatever your next source of revenue is. When those of us who have means are buying everything up out of fear that we might go without, doing two things. We're not putting something on the shelf for the elderly, for low income that may have transportation issues to get to the store, may not have the budget to buy in bulk. We're taking those resources and we're driving up the price. And so it's creating a larger problem for those around us. Part of the solution for our environment, for the environment people live in, and for our community to be healthy and sustainable in the long term, is each of us doing our part. And in some ways, that means being grateful for what you have and not going out for all of the excesses and extras that people don't have, thinking about someone else instead of ourselves first. And that's very, very hard, I think.
Well, the other piece of this that has always mystified me and continues to do just that is if we as a society make affordable housing a reality. And you know, pre-COVID-19, I was actually starting to see more intentional communities, more buzz about it, more people who have a lot of money wanting to invest and build and develop intentional communities. But with my deep and long background in social services, if you provide affordable housing to people, all of the people that want to stop doing giveaways, stop with handouts, blah, blah, blah. This is the ticket, because if you provide someone with safe and affordable housing, their kids do better in school, they have fewer absences, they become better educated, there's less absenteeism on the part of the employee, the heads of household. I mean, it is such a far-reaching ripple effect. Everybody freaking wins, because at the end of the day, they end up paying more taxes too. So it's like it shouldn't be a political issue. It can be made to be an economic issue. We can make the economic case for that. And if there's anything I've learned over the years about really going into the weeds about what Habitat does, all I need to hear is we give people a hand up, not a handout. And that is not a pithy little tagline. Let's just take on, you teach people how to conserve on electricity, because if you rent and you don't have to pay some of the utility bills, it's no big deal. I've heard stories from you about teaching people new skills because they never had the opportunity or the need to learn them. So now more than ever, it's so important, the work you're doing. What would you say? Let's just bring it home to Tucson. How are we doing? Do we have affordable housing? Who's being left out of the party? Who's not invited to the own affordable housing or rent affordable housing? What do the percentages look like? Because I know you eat, drink, and sleep this stuff.
We're about 18,000 units short on affordable.
Gotta be kidding me.
On designated affordable rental properties. That's not even homeownership. So if you think about, you know, the statistics on that, just think about that. Think about the implications. I always say this, you and I are here today because we had a safe place to stay last night.
Totally.
You know, we have, you know, clean facilities. We can take a shower every day. So, you know, we're successful in part based on that ability. So when we're giving someone a hand up, when we're helping someone who's a Habitat home buyer, they buy their home, they get, they provide sweat equity. You're right. We teach them the most economic way to that household, how to make economic meals, how to do all of those things. When you come from generational poverty, when no one in your family has owned a home, you don't have those basic skills. When you've lived in a rental all of your life, if you're lucky and have lived in something that meets housing standards, someone comes and fixes something when it breaks.
Right.
When you own your home, that doesn't happen.
Right.
So, philosophically, we want to build at Habitat the nicest, most energy efficient house we can, because then the long-term sustainability of the house feeds to the long-term, stability and self-reliance of the family. And, it's phenomenal to watch folks. We've called just about every one of our Tucson home buyers, 450 families in the last 2 weeks. And how are you doing? Some have lost income, some have not. Many are relying on what we ask people to do is establish a small emergency fund.
Right, right.
Just some basic skills that we do. So my guess would be, and this is anecdotal, but right now some Habitat home buyers are doing better than they would before they were through the 9 units of how do I manage these things. And,
right.
And we talk about crisis. We talk about community. So important. So important.
And you're there to help if they need it. So let's go to, one thing I want to ask, and I don't want to forget it, but before that, I want to ask about if you have one story to share about what's going on in Tucson. So why don't we do that first? Because do you have a real-life example of something you want to highlight? Because stories make it really relatable to people.
I do. I want to talk about, right now we have 11 homeowners, they've bought their houses from us, who work at Tucson Medical Center.
Wow.
So we are talking about people in not high-paying jobs, but are necessary. People movers, people that process the insurance, people that have essential jobs within the hospital or the medical center every single day, that also have their children and schooling and other things.
Yep.
We have a woman who's actually working from home, who works in the medical field. Two children, Adriana is her name, stay at home for years. She has, so single mom, two school-aged children, full-time job, Habitat homeowner, which means she's done all of her sweat equity, worked
right,
on houses.
Right.
She continues to volunteer for us, and I talked to her on the phone the other day, and she's not only taken work home from her job, she's, sheltered in place. She's very grateful. She's told me she feels so blessed to be able to work from home. But she's also called the Veterans Administration Hospital, where she volunteers one day a week.
Good Lord.
To see if there's anything she can do remotely for them. So she has her day scheduled out. These are my work hours. These are my working with my children on their school work hours. And then I have, other than sleeping, I have 2 hours a week that I can give to someone else. And those Habitat homeowners who work in the medical fields, who come to us specifically, they're my heroes this week. They really, for the last month, they are my heroes.
T, I talk about this with Kelly, our show producer, all the time. And I just say, the universe or God or whatever your belief system knew better than to have this happen to me when I would have had to homeschool my kids. I'm just not that person. And Kelly is our executive show producer. We're trying to do new content. We just launched a new show. We've lost some of our sponsors because we had a lot of restaurant clients. And she's fitting all that in with homeschooling two kids that are really smart and really, upset about this. I mean, she has a wonderful, neat family, but God forbid I would have to put factor in homeschooling my kids, I don't think I'd get an A+ in homeschooling. Let me just leave it at that.
In homeschooling, with the looming thought that I'm off of my job and I may not have a shelter over my children's head 30 days from now, 60 days from now.
I can't even go there. And, you know,
the level of stress on families has got to be unbelievable, way beyond, there are a lot of Americans, and I don't want to discount all of the Americans affected by the COVID-19 epidemic, but not just those that get sick or affected. All of us are undergoing major life changes. And for many of us, I know at the end of the day, I can be at home and I know that I have a safe place. I can go out and sit on my porch and feel the fresh air, even though I've been working away all day. But imagine not having that.
And
not
eating
knowing
whatever you want.
This week I will have a home.
Right. Eating.
Yes.
You're not worried about your kids being hungry. I feel the same way. I put a post up on Sunday and I cry a lot. Everybody who's a part of Mrs. Green's World knows I cry a lot. Proud of it. Want it to be part of my branding. I just well up on a regular basis with gratitude. And I go back to, I'm so grateful for my parents that when I was born, they could both read and write. All these tools they gave me. My father had a job. My mother was a stay-home mom and a really good one. They were educated. I mean, not college educated, but they had a home. They taught me to read mostly by, they read. So you're watching it. I have a picture of me as a kid reading the Wall Street Journal upside down because my father read the Wall Street Journal. I was like 3 years old and acting like I could read the paper. But all of these, like you said, people that are first-time homeowners because all they ever knew was renting and sometimes a lot of mobility comes with that, you know, and the beat goes on. So I want to shift for a minute to there's this pandemic. There are these rapidly changing times. We have no way of knowing what the impact is going to be from an economic standpoint. Can you give me some hope, no pressure here, T, about Habitat leaders and other people that you partner with about the long-term view? Because this is a long-term problem. Do you think that COVID-19 could bring about a heightened awareness about how vulnerable we are and that the cost of homes will be a real thing that we'll continue to talk about?
You know, I'm hoping that this does two things in our country and around the world, but in our country specifically. We need to come together for solutions, and I'm hopeful that we can try to do that. That this isn't just isolated and that we will realize these are as we're looking at national recovery and building national resilience, I'm hoping that we say to one another, okay, I just realized my neighbor is in this circumstance. I can help. I realized that there was a great, one of the car companies had a really wonderful ad last night about homeless youth and where do you shelter? So I really feel that the awareness is going to be there. And I hope the national priority is in shelter, food, education, those things that are so critical. I want to touch on education for just a minute because we talk about schooling the kids at home, but not everyone is able to do that right now.
Right.
So I think we are going to see a gap between low-income kids who may or may not have stable housing, but haven't had a parent that can economically afford to be there. They may not have internet, so they don't have access to their teachers or the electronics that are needed to access the programs that the schools are putting out. That is a critical issue that I'm not hearing a lot of people talking about. We're hearing a lot of conversation about how difficult it is, how there's a real appreciation for school teachers now. I'd like for us to reverse that and say, what a fortunate gift it is to have our children at home and know that we have the cognitive ability, the resources, and by resources, I'm talking a space that's safe and adequate light and a book to read to them, right? These are things that as we're, as a society, making jokes and, you know, can't get back to work to get away from the children are a luxury. Having that is a luxury for us. And so many families don't have that.
Millions
of families, millions of children right now are living in overcrowded, substandard conditions and being affected by this. I've used this example on your show before. You can take your child to the emergency room. I have asthma personally, so this really strikes home. The physicians at the emergency room can give your child all the medicine in the world. And when you return to overcrowded, unsanitary conditions, a house that has mold, a house right. that doesn't have proper ventilation, proper HVAC systems, the child doesn't get better. The environment that we live in on Earth, the environment that we live in for ourselves is so critical. And affordable housing is such a big part of that.
It's critical. It's critical. And I think I've told you the story on the air, and I've shared it with you personally. The reason why I was able to start my first business, which came out of intense pain, and it was not anything I ever set out to do, was because we could use our home as equity to start that business. So the bank said, what do you got? And I said, well, we've got a home and there's, you know, there's cash equity in it. And so they had to lean on our house if anything went wrong. That started our family on a path to success because we had
yes.
it. And if you just eliminate so many of those opportunities and make it such an unlevel playing field if you take that out. And everybody likes to drink the Kool-Aid that it's the reality, it's part of the American dream. You know, and I loved it when that expression was popular. I call BS, because if you dig a little bit deeper, just a little bit, you'll understand how seniors and people with disability and people that are undereducated, home ownership is out of reach for them. Period. The end. No conversation. Except for Habitat for Humanity. And I wasn't even going there, but it's like, it makes me smile. And you know about our partnership with Chapman Automotive Group here in Tucson. That's another thing where they get it. So they're very generous. They give a cash donation. We do two events now with Habitat for Humanity, the Brush with Kindness, and then a home build, because they know it's smart for them to help support citizens that can afford a car. Not joking. That if you can afford a home and you can buy a car, they know that by doing these things, it's not just charity. It's an investment in the community for the greater good. So other corporations, I know you have a lot of corporate support. They get that. It's like, yeah, if we do this, we all win, people. It's not a handout. Man,
no,
I am on such a soapbox today.
Workforce is more stable.
You
know, your workforce is more stable.
Right.
You know, if you have a safe, you know, let's go back to the previous scenario. A mom with a child that has asthma that isn't getting better is missing work intermittently. You know, there are so many, it's a domino. The one thing I'm hoping comes out of the COVID crisis is that we start looking at systems as, you know, reliant on one another. Housing is critical to having stable employment. Stable employment is critical to having housing. Good health, you know, stable housing is critical to health outcomes.
Yep.
And stable housing, on the other hand, helps mitigate and prevent many of the health things that we may do.
Right.
In the long run, housing is just one, but it's the one I come from. Housing is one of the biggest economic factors for all of those things. I do want to touch on something you said. You know, Habitat is famous for these large build days. We're 250, 300, we've had as many, you've been out with us, 500 people building in a day. And we can make immense progress when we come together on those days. Well, right now, we can't do that. And we don't know when in the foreseeable future we can come together like that. But there are so many ways that we are learning to come together. And we need to take this experience because there's going to be a new norm. And the sound that I love so much of 200 hammers starting at once. I'm going to get fucked up here. Right? Starting at once to build housing, to raise those walls, and the tears as the walls go up are not an experience that everyone is going to have.
Right.
So we have to go back to the core of why it is we were doing that. We feel terrific when we're doing that and we see the progress. We're going to have to learn as donors, as volunteers, as community activators, disruptors, I was going to say.
But disruptors you're going to have good. To learn. I said that. You are one, a.k.a. troublemaker.
A new way. We're going to have to find a new way for that gratification in the mass. Because I don't want you to stop as a corporation, stop giving because you can't bring a group out.
Right. Right.
I don't want you to, as an individual, forget that feeling or why you were there supporting us as a volunteer just because we aren't going to be able to accommodate that. The loss of our 5,600 volunteers a year is catastrophic. But if we can't keep things safe, we can't have them come back, which means that we're hiring more subcontractors. Even the cost of an affordable home for those of us providing them is growing exponentially because we can't leverage many of the resources and ideas that we had prior.
And I just, you know, I just feel like clapping because what the discipline I have been having to use in my head and telling the committee up there is two things. I'm using humor and I say, yep, Murph, it is Groundhog Day, but remember the movie? It had a happy ending. So someday you're going to wake That's up right. and it's not going to be freaking Groundhog Day. And the other thing I say is, I really have to live this one day at a time because we don't know when it's going to be over, but it's a perfect segue for what you said, and funny how that happens with you and I, is I'm just going to talk about our family because we are not spending as much money. Certainly zip on gas money, okay? My husband hasn't been in his truck for 4 weeks, okay? So we're saving money there. We are ordering once a week from a locally owned restaurant as part of our commitment. But we're not spending, and we're not big shoppers, you know, I don't hang out at the mall and all that stuff, but this inherent in it is you reduce your spending. So to your point, when we figure out what the new normal is in that ever-evolving conversation, more people are going to need Habitat for Humanity, Tucson and Phoenix and, you know, Nebraska and the world. I mean, they're going to need you more. So what's your ask? Not in terms of volunteering, but what can people who are looking for really good places to do a little bit? And to me, it doesn't matter if it's $5 or $500 or $2,500. Every week, our family decides what we're going to do to donate to a charity. And I've pretty much been doing it to, I'll be honest, youth on their own, because coming from a background of working with at-risk children and families, the youth are often the forgotten ones and they don't have a car to drive to the food bank and blah, blah, blah. But this is so important for people that have the ability to do it. What's your ask? What do you need the most and how can people help now?
Couple things. Number one, we can, of course, if you are financially able, make a donation to Habitat, to your favorite, you know, I always say, you know, donate with your heart to your favorite organization that provides housing. Mine happens to be Habitat. But there are others. There are a million ways. You know, domestic violence is on the rise. You know, in times of national stress. So maybe it's a shelter for women. But number one, you know, if you have the means, now is the time. Organizations are hurting. Organizations are going to close. Now is the time. The alternate things we have, like we have the Habby store where we generate revenue, closed for safety.
I know.
So if you can monetarily help, do that. The second thing, and this is anyone can do this, pick up your phone, call a local elected official, call a national elected official, advocate, talk to your friends and family about, I heard this wacky lady on the, you know, with Mrs. Green, and she went on and on and on about how important shelter was. If you tell a neighbor and a neighbor can do something, just advocacy doesn't have to be a formal letter to a congressman. Advocacy can be talking to your neighbor, talking to someone about how important shelter is and not letting the idea go away. Just making sure it stays in the national dialogue, stays in our local dialogue. So those are the two things that any one of us can do. The other thing that I would, and I'm recommending to everyone I know, I'll give you a great idea. Let's say you frequent a restaurant on a regular basis, or maybe you get your nails done. Or those things where you know people are not working, they get tips or, you know, almost like self-employment. Call them up. Talk to someone. Say, hey, can we go online, have a Zoom meeting, and five of us will get together and we'll pay the local bartender to show us how to mix our favorite drinks.
Right. I love it.
Right. Through Venmo, there's a million ways you could do that. You know, maybe you can't get your nails done, your hair done, whatever that is. But maybe you can video chat on your phone. Maybe they can talk you through, here are the items in your home manicure kit that you can use. And then let's pay those individuals for that service. It's a new type of service delivery.
It is.
But when we look at the service industry, it's always low income. They're primarily low income folks that work in those restaurants. Let me tell you, a waitress at a restaurant can give you a million tips on how to handle your grandparents or,
wonderful idea.
Right?
My hairdresser this was a joke with a lot of women in my demographic, and I'm sure not my demographic, is what the hell am I going to do about getting my hair, and I call it botanically and naturally based, altered, translation, dyed, when the roots start coming out, and she's putting together kits. Now, mm-hmm. T, we're not going to be YouTubing this, but my daughter's going to help me to do it myself, and I've never done it in my whole entire life. But those, and that's helping her to stay in business. Her income stopped in a day, like in a freaking day. It's like no chance. So,
and we all have that. We all have the news carrier. We all have someone
in our life
that we interact with that isn't able right now. You know, maybe it's a family member. Maybe it's one of my colleagues' wives. When they do their shopping, they're shopping for the couple that lives next door to them that are in their 80s, right? There's something each of us can do to support someone else.
Totally.
And so, you know, my ask isn't just for Habitat. My ask is for low-income families. Make a donation to an organization that is supporting them. Habitat for Humanity Tucson is a great example of those. But support someone one-on-one, and don't forget to keep the dialogue going about the inequities that we are seeing and that are really being accentuated by the crisis we're in right now. We can't forget.
And you said something that I just want to do the happy dance about, and I'm going to try to remember to add it to every single one of my podcasts. If I had a nickel for every flipping virtual candidate party I'm getting invited to, and to me, it's like I always ask, they say, oh yeah, here she comes. She's going to ask questions about the environment. So vote, which is what you're saying. Get involved in the political scene. Ask candidates that you believe in, regardless of your party affiliation, what they're doing about the housing crisis in America, because we all win. It's a Republican issue. It's a Democratic issue. It's a Libertarian issue, whatever the heck. So,
it's a human issue.
It's a human issue. That's what I say when people say, are you this or that? I go, no, I'm a humanitarian. Is there a party for that? So I will tell everybody, we'll make it very easy for people who want to donate. There'll be a link on the show page when the show is comes out. And here's my last words. And they are words that are coming to my head and my heart and my lips a lot. And it's very emotional for me. And they are words of gratitude for T, for her amazing team, for the thousands of volunteers, the army of volunteers that they engage every year, for the corporate sponsors that help the wheels on their bus go round and round, for habitats all over the country. There just isn't a downside. And we really do need to think about, as a country, how to give people who would not have a snowball's chance in hell of getting a home, how to get them one. I've seen the transformation for them with my own eyes in many ways because of my long-term relationship with Habitat for Humanity Tucson. And you know what, people? One of the most common expressions that people use, and there's a reason these expressions stay around. It takes a village. It takes an army. It takes tenacity and money. And from where I sit, Habitat's covering those bases, and I thank you for that. And then I always close with the same thing, a thank you and deep gratitude to all of our listeners, because without you, there would be no us. So T. Van Hook, spread the word to your team on your next Zoom call that you made Mrs. Green one very happy camper again. And I hope we can raise some money for you and raise the consciousness, because this is a long-term thing. So thanks, my friend.
Thank you for having us, and let's just all be safe and take care of one another.
I know, and I can't wait to see you again in the flesh. Okay, everybody, stay safe, stay home, and do what you can to be a part of making a difference. And thanks for being a part of my world.